is demonstrated perfectly in the life of Bali Maharaj, who, having once understood that it was the Supreme Lord who had come in the guise of a dwarf Brahmana to demand charity from him, happily gave everything that the Lord asked him. And this is indeed the nature of not just a Kshatriya but also a devotee. So the combination of the two is glorious. In the scriptures, in the Vedic scriptures, and in particular the Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of the Kshatriyas have been described. Of course, many of the Kshatriyas were not Vaishnavas in the past, but they still had certain qualities. Like Jarasandha, for example, he was not a devotee by any means. He was demoniac. He was an asura. But he had certain principles by which he lived. When people came and brahmanas came to him to ask in charity, he did not refuse. Even though he strongly suspected and even knew that these three persons who have come in front of me are not brahmanas, they're dressed as brahmanas, but they don't look like brahmanas. And those three were, of course, Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna. When a time came for Yudhishthira Maharaj to perform the Rajasuya Yajna, by which his suzerainty or dominion over the world would be established, it was necessary to subdue all kings who might oppose the to-be emperor. So then, on the advice of Uddhava, Krishna suggested to Yudhishthira Maharaj that first King Jarasandha must be subdued. And in order to subdue him, actually we shouldn't chant in the class, yes? So, and then Yudhishthira Maharaj obliged to the request. And Krishna suggested that Bhima, Krishna and Arjuna should go. And they should go dressed as brahmanas and ask in charity from Jarasandha. What would they ask in charity? They would ask for battle, for a fight. So we see both principles here. Number one, they're going in the dress of brahmanas, asking for charity. Number two, they're asking for a fight. And these are two things a kshatriya can never refuse. And that's exactly what's mentioned here in the purport, and also in the verse, as spoken by the Lord himself. So when they enter, these three enter not through the main gates, but they break open the walls and go in. Commando style. So they break in. That's not the way brahmanas enter. That's the way sometimes very belligerent kshatriyas enter. So brahmanas go in a very humble way through the main door. But these three stormed into the center. And when they arrived in front of Jarasandha, then he was curious to know who these three personalities were. So he welcomed them in his court, and because they were dressed like brahmanas, he treated them as such. And he asked them, "You don't look like brahmanas, but nevertheless you're dressed as brahmanas, and you're coming to me as brahmanas. Therefore please tell me, what is your intention in coming here? What can I do for you?" So then Krishna said, "We have come here to ask something in charity from you." So even though Jarasandha was a demon, but he followed certain Kshatriya principles, which is that when a Brahmana comes to your court or he asks you for some charity, you must never refuse. So even though he was demoniac, he said, "Yes, please tell me, what charity do you want? I can give you anything you like." So then they said, "We want to fight with you." He said, "Really, but you are brahmanas?" He said, "No." Then they revealed their identity. They said, "I am Krishna, this is Bhima, and this is Arjuna." So Jarasandha said, "Yes, I will certainly fulfill your desire, and you have challenged me to fight. And as a Kshatriya, I cannot refuse to fight. Had you been Brahmanas, I would not have fought. But since you have now revealed yourself as Kshatriyas, I am obliged to fight with you, and I will happily do that. But as far as Arjuna is concerned, he is younger than me, so I can't fight with him. It's not right for me to fight with him. As far as you are concerned, Krishna, you ran away from the battlefield when I came earlier to fight with you when you were in Mathura. So you're a coward, so I don't fight with cowards who run away from the battlefield. But Bhima, yes, he is my rightful equal. So I'll fight with Bhima. And then Jarasandha had they went outside the city gates. Not that they, you know, indulge in subversive terrorist warfare, hiding behind somewhere and then shooting or something. They went out into the open and had one-on-one combat. And of course, as we all know, with Krishna's, a little help from Krishna in terms of good advice, Bhima was able to defeat Jarasandha in battle. It was an evenly matched contest. Both were extremely strong. Jarasandha was more skilled, but Bhima had power, so it was an even match. And the duel went on for a long time, and there wasn't any result. And finally, both were tiring. And it was very necessary to have a certain positive outcome on behalf of the Pandavas. So then Krishna indicated, he took a blade of grass and he split it in the center and pulled it all the way and indicated by this act to Bhima that this is how he should kill Jarasandha. Because when Jarasandha had been born, he had been born in two halves. He had been discovered by a certain demoness or a witch or something like that in two halves. And then he had been put together in two halves. So in those days there must have been some kind of advanced surgery or something available by which they fixed the body together. They joined the two parts of the body. And initially, of course, the parents of Jarasandha wanted to throw him out, wanted to dispose of the body. But upon the advice of this lady, then she put the two parts together, and lo and behold, there was this very strong little child who was born, extremely powerful. So that was Jarasandha. So that was his weak spot. You see, in fighting, Kshatriyas always have a weak spot. So this was his weak spot, and this was the way he could be killed. So Krishna knew this very well. So he, even though Jarasandha had attacked 17 times, he had come to Mathura, Krishna had defeated him on all these occasions easily. He had destroyed his armies and he had defeated Jarasandha, but he had been magnanimous and had released Jarasandha. You can go back. And each time Jarasandha would come with another huge army, and the same story would repeat. On the 18th occasion, when Jarasandha attacked Mathura, Krishna and Balaram conferred with each other and came to the conclusion that it's better we transfer our dear devotees, the citizens of Mathura, to Dwarka. We don't want to keep fighting like this. And in any case, Krishna had his internal reason. Rukmini was going to send him a letter asking that she wanted to marry him. So now it was time for Krishna to do his Dwarka Leela. So Krishna has many external and internal reasons for doing what he does. So then in a moment, he transferred all the citizens of Mathura to Dwarka physically by his mystic powers, even as they were all sleeping in the middle of the night. And they woke up to find themselves in Dwarka, every single citizen of Mathura. And then Krishna and Balaram came out of the city of Mathura and started walking away, and Jarasandha was furious. And that is why he actually offended Krishna by saying, I won't fight with you because you ran away from the battlefield, you're a coward. And one of the principles of a Kshatriya is yuddhecha apalayanam. You should not flee in a battlefield. And that's why one name of Krishna is Ranchor. Ran means a battlefield, chod means to leave. If an ordinary Kshatriya leaves a battlefield and runs away, he is condemned. But when Krishna runs away from the battlefield, he is glorified. Because whatever Krishna does is glorious. When somebody steals, he is condemned, punished. But when Krishna steals butter, he steals the clothes of the gopis, he is glorified. So in any case, Jarasandha was well aware of the principles of Kshatriya behavior. And he fought valiantly with Bhima. And Krishna, in a clever way, indicated to Bhima what had to be done to kill Jarasandha. And then he flipped him onto the floor and caught his two legs and split him through the middle, so the entire body like this, vertically. And that's how Jarasandha was killed. And then Yudhishthir Maharaj now could perform the Rajasuya Yajna. There were no more thorns in his path. Also, on the other hand, Bhaumasura had been killed. He had held many of the queens captive. So no one else remained who would obstruct the path of King Yudhishthir. So we see here in this pastime that even though Jarasandha was not a devotee of the Lord, he abided by certain Kshatriya principles. Now this is something very extraordinary. This code of conduct, the sense of righteousness when it came to following one's dharma of being a Kshatriya or a Brahmana, was so strong that even though they didn't believe in God, they didn't believe in Krishna, Vishnu, but they acted like this in a righteous way. Even Duryodhana, what to speak of Jarasandha? When we think of Duryodhana, we never think of anything nice. There's only some negative things that come into our mind when we hear about Duryodhana. Of course, when a person like Yudhishthira used to think of Duryodhana, he used to call him Suyodhana, not Duryodhana. He would always think nice about others. But anyway, he was known as Duryodhana. So when the time came to ask something, he kept his vow. When Krishna wanted something in charity, Duryodhana had to give. He said, "Yes, what do you want?" When Arjuna actually went to his tent in the course of the battle of Kurukshetra. So Arjuna, what do you want? Do you want the kingdom in charity? But it is below a Kshatriya's dignity to ask something like that. A Kshatriya would sacrifice his life, but he would never go to ask in charity from another king. A Kshatriya only gives in charity, he never takes in charity. So when Duryodhana asked, "Do you want the kingdom?" it was against Arjuna's Kshatriya principles to say, "Yes, please give me the kingdom." He would have received it in proper discourse, but not in terms of charity. So now this was something that was very instructive. "So what do you want?" He says, "I want those arrows that you had said you would give." And so the five arrows which Duryodhana had reserved, had kept properly, which Bhishma had given him to kill Arjuna and the five Pandavas actually, those were the five arrows which Arjuna took back. And this was of course a plot that was hatched by none other than Krishna. Because Bhishma had taken a vow that I'm going to kill the five Pandavas. Because Duryodhana would keep on taunting him that you are siding with the Pandavas. You're deliberately going soft when you come in front of the Pandavas. You have the power to kill them. No one can come in front of you. But still, you're not killing them. So when he was repeatedly taunted like this, Bhishma couldn't take it anymore. So he said, "All right, I take a vow. Then I will kill the five Pandavas with these five arrows." And Duryodhana was very clever, very cunning. So he said, "All right, give me those five arrows in case you change your mind tomorrow." So he kept the five arrows. And Krishna knew about this. So he told Arjuna, "Here's the time. After the battle is over for the day, go to Duryodhana in his tent." Again, just see the principles of Kshatriya warfare. When the battle was over for the day, they would mingle with each other in each other's tents as if they were friends. Then come next morning, and again they would fight to kill each other. They would fight only from dawn to dusk. Not before, not after. And after that, they would mingle with each other, go to each other's tents, take food together. That was how Kshatriyas lived in those days. Now this code of conduct is very astonishing. We cannot imagine such a thing in the modern day when everything goes on subversively. Terrorists plant bombs and people fight behind all sorts of other tricks and so on. But those days, Kshatriya warfare was like that. You came face to face, but you never did anything that was subversive. So Duryodhana also gave in charity those five arrows. He was obliged. He had his word to fulfill. He gave it. And because of that, Bhishma became enraged and he took a vow that just as Krishna has made me break my vow, I am going to make Krishna break his vow. Because Krishna's vow had been that he wouldn't lift a weapon in the battlefield. And indeed, he enforced Krishna to lift a chariot wheel to protect Arjuna, because Bhishma fought so fiercely against Arjuna that Arjuna's chariot also got stuck. And Krishna had to jump down from the chariot, lift the wheel and move aggressively towards Bhishma. That was the perfection of Bhishma's life. So this is the kind of life that the Kshatriyas led in those days. This was the Varnashrama system that used to exist in those days. So nowadays, of course, in Kali Yuga, the whole Varnashrama system has been thoroughly corrupted and distorted. So in India, it goes by the name of the caste system, which is actually a perversion of the Varnashrama Dharma. That's not the way it was meant to be. And in the rest of the world, there is no semblance of any caste, any Varnashrama system, formally, officially. Although we will find people of different natures, and to some degree you can put them into certain slots. This person has a Brahmanical nature, this person has a Kshatriya nature, this person has a Vaishya nature. So the principles are still to some extent visible. Some glimpse of the Varna system can be seen all over the world in terms of the natures of people. So the Bhagavad Gita and the other Vedic scriptures instruct us that a person is to be understood as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra according to the qualities that the person displays and also the nature of the activities. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, for example, Krishna says, Samo damo tapashaucham shantir arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astityam brahma karma svabhavacham. These are the nine qualities that Krishna says are the characteristics of a Brahmana. Self-control, peacefulness and equanimity, cleanliness, etc. The nine qualities that he lists out. Similarly, in the next verse, he talks about the seven qualities that characterize a Kshatriya. So if any person has these seven qualities, he is to be considered a Kshatriya, not otherwise. So those qualities are listed here. Shauryam chet tejo dhritir daksham yuddhecha apalayanam danam ishvara bhavascha kshatram karma svabhavacham. So the seven characteristics of a Kshatriya that are listed by Krishna are Shauryam, which means heroism. Shauri. Name, you've heard the word Shauri. So in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is also called Shauri. Hari Shauri, you've heard this word. So Shauryam means that he must be heroic in nature. Tejaha means he must be very powerful. Dhritihi means he must be very determined. Dakshyam comes from the word Daksha, which means to be very resourceful. Ishvara Bhava, or rather before that, Yuddhecha Apalayanam. Yuddhe means in battle, Palayana means to run. Apalayana means to never run, to not run. So a Kshatriya can never flee from the battlefield. He either emerges victorious or he dies in the battlefield. This is a very important principle of Kshatriya conduct. And then there is Danam, which means to give in charity. Ishvara Bhava means the quality of leadership. A Kshatriya is a natural leader. So these are the seven qualities that characterize a Kshatriya's conduct. And anybody who has these seven qualities, therefore, is called a Kshatriya. So in accordance with these principles, when a Kshatriya is asked to give in charity, he can never refuse. And when he is challenged to fight, he can never refuse. In fact, even when he is challenged, he's subjected to any challenge, he should not refuse. And that is the reason Yudhishthir Maharaj felt himself obliged to gamble, to enter the gambling match against Duryodhana, Dushasana, Shakuni and so on, because they challenged him to a game of dice. And a Kshatriya is not supposed to refuse any kind of challenge. So he was obliged by his Kshatriya codes of conduct. And of course, the dice was rigged. It was a rigged contest. And Yudhishthir Maharaj lost everything in that gambling match. Or even in battle, if anybody is challenged to battle, they can't refuse. They have to fight, whoever they may be. So these are certain principles that the Kshatriyas lived by. And here in the life of Bali Maharaj, Vamana Dev is reminding him that you come from a family of exalted... Till what time is the class, by the way? 8:15? 8:30? What is the normal time? 8:30, okay. So, the Lord appeared, came before Bali Maharaj and reminded him, just in case Bali Maharaj were to change his mind or to have second thoughts about it. He said, Bali Maharaj, you come in a very glorious lineage of very exemplary Kshatriyas. Now, I have come before you as a Brahmana, and you're supposed to give in charity whatever I ask. So now, you can't refuse what I ask you. And then he tells him, he reminds him of the duties of a Kshatriya. I'll repeat the translation of text 4. O King Bali, never in your dynasty has a low-minded king been born who, upon being requested, has refused charity to Brahmanas in holy places. They were in a holy place at that time. Or a fight to Kshatriyas on a battlefield. And your dynasty is even more glorious due to the presence of Prahlad Maharaj, who is like the beautiful moon in the sky. So Vamana Dev wants to ensure that Bali Maharaj will keep his promise. And then of course he delivers Bali Maharaj by his mercy, by taking away everything from Bali Maharaj. So this is the pastime. This is a very wonderful pastime that teaches us many, many lessons. Bali Maharaj is not just a Kshatriya, he is also a great devotee. And therefore, even when his non-devotee spiritual master, who was more in Karma Kanda, Shukracharya, forbade him from giving in the third step in charity, because he warned him, Shukracharya said, this is Vishnu in disguise and he's going to take everything away from you. So Bali Maharaj said, well, as a Kshatriya, I can't do that. I've given him a promise. He's a Brahmana. He's come to me asking for charity and I have to give everything. And as you know, there's always a loophole in everything. So Shukracharya was very intelligent. So he said, look, there are some loopholes here. There are certain conditions under which a promise need not be fulfilled. And one of those conditions, for example, is that you must say Om when you grant a promise and you haven't said it, so then you're not obliged. And there are so many other conditions. But Bali Maharaj wasn't going to look for loopholes. He said, no. I have given my word of honor and I must keep it. And he refused his spiritual master's orders. Of course, his so-called spiritual master was not a devotee of the Lord. So in that sense, he was not a bona fide spiritual master. So then Bali Maharaj was perfectly right in disobeying the orders of such a spiritual master, who was a Karmakandi spiritual master. So the kings were supposed to be not just kings, but also saints. So they were called Rajarishis. And this combination was a perfect combination. A person who was a Kshatriya, who had all these seven qualities that are mentioned here, at the same time he was also a devotee of the Lord. He was a sage. So kings like Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, Rishabdev Maharaj, were Rajarishis, saintly kings. This is the dire need of the hour for the world at the present moment, where we need saintly kings. We need leaders in government. We need leaders in every stage of life who are going to be devotees of the Lord and also endowed with the kind of qualities that are necessary to govern people and protect them from all sorts of adharma. Thank you very much. We'll stop here and leave some time for questions and comments. Yes. Your question is that gambling is against the regulative principles of dharma. So how can a kshatriya accept a challenge for gambling? You see, the kshatriyas in those days were given some liberties because that was their nature. They were allowed to hunt animals. And the reason for that is that they needed practice to kill. A kshatriya couldn't afford to be squeamish when it came to fighting in a battle with human beings. There are some people who may not like the sight of blood, or may not like the sight of killing another person, or they may not be able to be violent when necessary. But for a kshatriya, he has to be violent when the need arises. For the protection of dharma, for the protection of the people, he may have to be violent sometimes. Not whimsically, but as per need. So in order that he remains strong and gets practice to kill, they were allowed to hunt. At the same time, there was some bad karma associated with that. So for example, we see Dasharath Maharaj was going out to hunt, and he heard some noise, he heard some sound in the forest. He thought it was an animal that was drinking water, but it was actually Shravan Kumar who was filling water in his pitcher, and he was going to take it back to his blind parents. And Dasharath Maharaj had the power to shoot accurately the target simply by hearing sound, even without seeing the person. And he shot the arrow, it struck its target and killed the boy. And then you know the story, he got the curse. So the moral of the story is that even though a kshatriya may be allowed to do these things, but it has its consequences. So similarly, there is some leeway if a kshatriya, when he's approached by a lady, he cannot refuse. Lord Ramachandra refused Shurpanakha because he had taken a vow, Eka Patni Vrata, that I will marry only one wife. But another, as other kshatriyas, when Arjuna was approached, when Bhima was approached, when Krishna was approached, they could not refuse. Similarly, gambling. There was some leeway. Some kshatriyas gambled. It is one of them. Sometimes they had some intoxication. These things some of the kshatriyas did sometimes. And there are descriptions like this. Because that's their nature. They're in the mode of passion. A kshatriya is one who's in the mode of passion. The brahmanas are those who are in the mode of goodness. The Vaishyas are those who are in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. Shudras are those who are fully in the mode of ignorance. So because they're in the mode of passion, these are the things they do. So some leeway is given to them. So some of times they gamble also. So they're permitted to gamble. But then again, just like Dasharatha Maharaj in hunting, here is a lesson. You gamble, but see the consequences. And see what happened to Yudhishthira Maharaj because he gambled. Right? Any other question? Yes. Why did he accept? Under what circumstances did Bali Maharaj accept Shukracharya? Okay, knowing Shukracharya was not a devotee, why did he accept him as a spiritual master? He accepted him more like a kula guru or a family guru for performance of many ritualistic activities that a king was also supposed to do. There were many, many ritualistic ceremonies that had to be performed. So Shukracharya was the priest of the demigods, of the asuras, I beg your pardon. Brihaspati was a priest of the demigods. So many ceremonies were to be performed. So he was a spiritual master in the sense of being a family priest who would advise the king on all matters of ritual and ceremony and so on. But he didn't really accept him as a spiritual master to surrender unto. Not for spiritual advancement. Any other questions, sir? Yes, Sarvabhauma. Followed. Okay, so your question is that even in the battle of Kurukshetra, there was some transgressions of the normal codes of conduct of a Kshatriya, like the killing of Abhimanyu and so on. Yes, and these, however, were the exceptions rather than the norm. Normally, these rules were followed, but only on occasion they were broken in very extraordinary circumstances, and the reactions came for those. So therefore, for the killing of Abhimanyu unjustly, then see, it infuriated Arjuna so much that he went on a rampage, and there were devastating consequences for the Kauravas because of that. And eventually, even when Bhishma and Drona had to be killed in what seemed to be unjust ways, Krishna replied that basically you're getting back what you deserve. You killed Abhimanyu like this, unjustly. So you also deserve, as a result, an unjust death. So it was like that. Even when Krishna indicated to Duryodhana, or to Bhima, when he was fighting Duryodhana, because again, it was an even match. They were having a battle of the mace club. And the battle was going on for a long time. And again, Duryodhana was more skilled, but Bhima was stronger. So they were fighting and there was no result. And then Krishna indicated to Bhima by slapping his thigh like this. He just tapped his thigh, his own thigh, indicating to Bhima that this is where he must hit Duryodhana. And that was against the principles of Kshatriya warfare. You're not supposed to strike an opponent below the waist. And that's what Bhima did. And that's why Balram, when he came to know, was so enraged. He wanted to kill Bhima, but it was only when Krishna intervened then Balaram was somewhat pacified. But then the reactions came. And eventually, because Krishna was involved in killing the, planning the killing of the sons of Gandhari, she cursed him that you will also, your whole family will also end like this. So ultimately they all have the reactions as well. But overall these are exceptions more than the norm. Even Lord Ram, he killed Vali from behind, which is normally never done. You don't kill an opponent from behind. You always fight face to face and kill. And then when Vali was in his last moments with the arrow on his back, he looked around shocked and said to Ram, why have you done this? First of all, I have no enmity with you. So why should you kill me? Number two, how could you do this, which is completely against the principles of warfare? How could you shoot me from the back? And then Ram replied that basically you also transgress the principles by abducting your brother's wife. And that's a great sin. And therefore you're in no position to preach to me about proper conduct. You're getting the just results of your own acts. So this is the karmic reaction he was getting basically. And because it's the Lord who's a dispenser of justice and the one who actually awards the results of our actions. So sometimes the reactions will come through material nature, and sometimes they may be directly dispensed by the Lord himself. So for Vali, he was fortunate. The Lord personally dispensed justice. He personally killed Vali. So Vali was getting the reaction. So even though it was an act that was against Kshatriya warfare, it was the Supreme Lord and he was doing it with a purpose. And also, Lord Ram told Vali, if you think that you're a monkey, then for a Kshatriya to kill a monkey is not a problem. Kshatriya has to hunt. So I've not done anything against my dharma. And if you think that you're a Kshatriya and we should fight, then you should know that a Kshatriya can't abduct another's wife also. So that's a crime too for you, which you're getting the punishment. So dharma, in terms of the codes of conduct, is also very complex. Very complex. And it's very hard to figure out. That's why the kings used to have so many brahmanas as a council of advisors. Every now and then there was a great dilemma. What should we do in terms of dharma? Should we do this or should we do that? Right? Even when Krishna was wondering, what should I do? Should I go to Hastinapur because Yudhishthir wants to perform the Rajasuya? Or should I then go and rescue these princesses who have sent a message? You know. So he's always, the Kshatriyas were in dilemmas at times, and they needed a good advisors who knew dharma. Okay, this is what you should be doing. When Durvasa Muni came to Ambarish Maharaj and he said, I'm coming back, but he didn't come back for quite a while. The time for breaking the fast was elapsing. So what to do now? So he asked his advisors, they said, just sip a drop of water. It's like breaking the fast and not breaking the fast at the same time. So these are very delicate things that arise in the Vedic scriptures, in Vedic history. So we need to see that from the point of view of the acharyas, how they explain. So that explains why sometimes there were these violations. And sometimes you get carried away in the heat of the moment and you may violate the codes. But then there are consequences for that. Okay, so I think we've crossed our time. So thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.